So I think the name on the door changed somehow. So this is actually building connected Windows 8 apps with Windows Azure Mobile Services. So I will just finish making the presentation and we will start in 30 seconds. If I can figure this out. How's everyone liking the conference so far? Good? Epic day, very long. Thank you for coming. Yeah, I got to say, I haven't actually been at a conference where sessions are at this point in time. So I'm just preparing something sort of cool that I managed to organize for you guys. I'll close all this stuff. So are we on two there? All right, I'll give you guys a heads up when we're about to start. We'll probably start in a minute. But could you cut onto this monitor here? Or project that? So we'll get started in a second. Thank you guys for coming. Basically, what I want to say for you guys is I've managed to organize a few things. So who here has a Windows Azure subscription at the moment? One person. Who's an MSDN subscriber? A couple people. So before we start, let's have a look at this. So in short, if you're an MSDN subscriber or a member of BizSpark or those other sort of programs that we have, we've actually got a number of different member offers that are available for you. So for MSDN subscribers, for instance, you can see here if you're Visual Studio Professional, Premium, or Ultimate, there's different amounts of Windows Azure that you basically get for free. So those options are available. For those people who don't have a subscription or anything like that, I've managed to get 60 accounts, which I'm sure everyone in the room will use up quite quickly because we've got so many of you. But if you, I don't normally do this, but if you email me at nickha@microsoft.com, I'll send through a live ID and a password for you, and those accounts will already be pre-enabled with mobile services. So they only last 2 weeks, so sorry about that, but it should still be pretty good if you want to get in and get dirty during TechEd. The next thing is, so the Windows Store was opened today, and one of the announcements they made there is basically if you're an MSDN member, you can go to that bit.ly and you can get your store account. And if you're a TechEd attendee and you're not an MSDN member, then if you go to that link there and submit your details, they'll get a coupon back to you, which will give you sort of a free store account. So let's cut across to the main slides here. And let's get started. So today, I guess my name is Nick Harris. Thank you for having me here. This is my, I guess, the country where I grew up. I grew up an hour and a half south. To the guys up the back, you can start recording if you like. Hello? Awesome. Okay, I grew up about an hour and a half south in Nimbin, actually, so it's been quite an interesting career. Somehow, 29 years later, I made it to I'm now at Microsoft, so I've been working in Redmond, Washington for the past year and a half as a Windows Azure technical evangelist. So today we're going to talk about building connected Windows Store apps with Windows Azure Mobile Services. So just a show of hands here, who attended anywhere at the conference where I've sort of talked about this already? I provided a short demo in the kickoff. We got one person. Anyone else? I know it's late. Is that beer? No. Almost. I tried to organize some, but they said I have to serve food if we've got beer, and I didn't have any. So what we'll do is we'll sort of talk about Windows Azure Mobile Services, and we'll look at three or four key scenarios with mobile services. That is, what's the data story? How do we deal with structured storage and interacting with the services that mobile services will create for us? How do we add push notifications to our applications, utilizing mobile services to send those notifications? How do we deal with auth in our Windows Store apps? And lastly, how do we use diagnostics and scale features of Windows Azure for these services that we're creating? So probably the first thing we should cover off is, what is Windows Azure Mobile Services? So the goal of Windows Azure Mobile Services is essentially to make it incredibly easy for you to create a back-end service for your mobile apps. So if you think of traditional approaches today, you may be going and creating a WCF service, a WCF REST service, a web API or something like that, writing a whole bunch of code, and then having to go and deploy that up into, say, Windows Azure. Mobile services sort of takes a different view at this and essentially makes it easy for you to get that same functionality, but without having to write any of that common scaffolding code that you'd have to if you were sort of writing them from scratch yourselves. And we'll see examples of that today. But if we want to talk about what the key tenets are of mobile services, we can see the first one is data. Most mobile apps need some form of storage off device. So we provide a means for you to store structured data within a SQL database running in Windows Azure. For those of you who have sort of heard about Windows Azure before or looked at it, essentially we used to call it SQL Azure. Now we call it SQL Database. So if you hear me say SQL Database, I actually mean SQL Azure. I'm just being marketing term correct. The next thing that we sort of, scenario which we targeted was push notifications. So most, say, applications on major mobile platforms support push notifications of some sort. If we talk about Windows 8, we support notifications like tiles, toasts, and badges, and we'll see some examples of that today. But notifications are an important piece of any application on these major mobile platforms. They essentially are a way to draw users back into your application. So we support notifications. One of the key things that a lot of developers hit when they're building out these services from scratch on their own is essentially they build out a service and they deploy it, but then the next sort of difficult step is, well, how exactly do I lock this service down such that, you know, everyone out there in the world can't be hitting my service and perhaps reading my data, which may only be for my application users? So mobile services addresses this issue as well. We also provide the capability to have server-side logic or server-side scripts that operate and execute within a CRUD pipeline. So if you're executing an insert, update, delete, or read against your mobile service, you can optionally add server-side business logic in there that will execute. And we'll see that as well today. Diagnostics, like all things Windows Azure, we provide a means for you to go and essentially see diagnostics about your live and running service. We provide some logging capability for debugging. And we also provide the common scale up and scale out options. And today, in this 1 hour session, we're going to see all of that. So hold on to your hats. But what are the key scenarios for mobile services? Well, the first key scenario is really it's there to support modern mobile apps. So we're talking about Windows 8. In the future, today we support Windows 8. We're already working on support for Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. So we're building client SDKs for those. So you can rest assured that quite soon we'll have SDKs for them, and you'll be able to utilize mobile services not just on Microsoft platforms, but also alternative platforms as well. So, next thing is, I updated that slide, that's what I was doing before we come, so the animation was a bit out of order there. But if we look, so modern mobile apps, common scenarios, so reduce the friction associated with those common tasks, data, auth, and push. And lastly, basically mobile services helps you rapidly develop an application. If you're an app developer, time is money. You can't be sitting there spending a lot of time building out these common scenarios, because basically if someone else can solve you for them and you can focus on basically building the app that you want and adding value to your users by perhaps focusing on the client platform or the user experience, then that's essentially going to save you a lot of time there. So if you take away anything today, I'd really like you to take away how much we're going to achieve in just 1 hour and 15 minutes. So you'll see the app that we start with, and by the end of it, we're going to have something that incorporates the push, the structured storage, and user auth. And I guess if you went out and tried to do that, you know, writing it all from scratch, you'd probably find it's going to take you a lot longer to do, and it'll be quite a bit more complex than what you'll see today. So I think we'll start with the getting started. For those of you who have already seen this, bear with me, we'll get through it. This is just the sort of foundation of the app that we're going to build out through the rest of the session. So let's cut across to my other machine here and build out the getting started scenario. Can you guys up the back there see that? Put your hand up if you can't. Nope, we're all good. Okay, how about you, David? Are your eyes ailing? All right. So this is the Windows Azure portal, and this is mobile services. So this is the new feature that we released within Windows Azure. To add a new mobile service, you can see I've been practicing here and hoping that things don't fail. but we can add a new mobile service by just clicking New down the bottom here and Create. So the first thing that it's really asking for here is, you know, what's my unique subdomain for this application? And we're going to provide this, and that's going to be, you know, our public URL for our app. So does anyone at this late hour of the evening wish to provide a name for our mobile service? Come on. It's got to be something. No? Beer? O'clock? What's that? Okay. Let's do that. Let's do beer o'clock. So beer o'clock. Now, our mobile service is going to be backed by a SQL database. So we've got two options here. You can essentially say, let's deploy it to an existing database, or let's deploy it to a brand new database. I'm going to use an existing database because essentially that means I can have multiple mobile services pointing at the one DB, and then I've got a multi-tenant database, and essentially it just means you get more bang for your buck. So let's say DBA and password. So it's asking for permissions to create that mobile service within that DB, so I just need to provide my credentials. So what this is doing now is it's going out and provisioning our entire mobile service. It's creating a new schema in my multi-tenant DB called beer o'clock, and that's how it's going to go and partition out all the data. And it's also standing up a service API for our client applications to go and interact with. So it should only take a few seconds, normally around 20 or 30, which is pretty good. And who else has their fingers crossed? There we go. Awesome. So there's beer o'clock. It's been provisioned. So let's build that first app. We're going to use a quick start here, and it will be this application which we evolve over the course of the session. So really for your client applications, you need the client SDK to interact with this mobile service that we've provisioned. So in this case, we're going to have a Windows Store app, and there's a mobile services SDK for that. As we add support for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone, you'll also see client SDKs for those as well. Next thing in this quick start is to basically create a two-to-item table, and we'll see how we deal with structured storage shortly as we move on through the session. But essentially, this two-to-item table is a table within that SQL database that mobile service is going to expose under a REST API so our clients can call into it and store data or delete data or query that data out. And the last thing in this quick start, what it provides here is essentially a sort of a boiler template mobile application, or in this case, a Windows Store app. We've got two flavors of languages there, JavaScript and C#. We'll eventually add the C++ variant. The mobile services client library does work if you're building a native C++ application. We just haven't written the sample yet. So I'm going to use C# because I'm more familiar with it. How many people here are HTML5.js developers? No one? That's good. Otherwise, I would have had to send you out. No, you would have been able to stay. But I'm a big .NET C# fan. But the cool thing about Windows 8 is essentially you can build your client applications in the language of your choice. So if you're really familiar with HTML5.js, you can do that. If you're familiar with C# XAML, you can use that as well. So I'm going to extract my beer o'clock, and there it is. And let's spin this guy up. Hit OK. Close my TFS. Let's go back here. Lovely. That is interesting. Let's try that again. First time ever I haven't been able to open a solution in Visual Studio. You can do it. It's my TFS. Go away. Reload the project for more information. Okay. Ta-da. Okay. Excellent. I don't know what was going on there, but it was something. So let's spin this up and see what it does. Then we'll look at the code. Then we'll jump onto some. Then we'll jump onto some of the more advanced features. So it seems like my Visual Studio is in a bit of an inconsistent state here. So let me close some of these other instances down. And what is that? Okay. Okay, close you. Apologies. That looks a bit better. Okay. There we go. So let's start this guy up. It's a simple to-do application. Now on the left here, basically it allows us to insert a to-do item. When this is executed, it's actually going to go and store that data, our to-do item, up in our Windows Azure mobile service. And you'll see on the right, we'll just be basically showing all the data that we've gone and added up there. So if I put my first to-do item in here is check what is going on with VS. Hit save. We'll see that I've now added an item and it's been persisted in my mobile service. And the next one we'll do is complete the presentation with no more errors. Save that guy. Right, so there's two things. So I can also complete items, and I can also query my server. So let's that's a pretty basic sample, but what I'd really like to show you is how simple we've made the API for you to consume from your Windows Store apps in terms of being able to execute those CRUD operations, the insert, the update, and delete against your mobile service. So if I expand this guy out here, you can see that this has downloaded that client SDK, the mobile services client SDK. And that's essentially your gateway to mobile services. If we expand our app.cs here, we can see that we've got a reference to the mobile service client. So that little quick start has gone and populated this for us. And it's taking two very important pieces of information. The first one is a URL, our URL to our mobile service. And the second one is an application key, which essentially ensures that the client that's hitting that service has the correct application key for that service, and they're just not anyone else out there on the internet. When we talk about auth, we'll see some ways that we can get more granular on how we lock that down. And the last thing that we needed to go and interact with that service, apart from the reference to it, is a to-do item. Our to-do item consisted of just some text and a complete operation. So when I added an item, it got stored in the text field, and when I completed an item, it changed a Boolean flag to true or false. So let's scroll down a bit more and see how we did those inserts and updates. So the first thing that we did was we got a handle to the to-do item table. So you can see there's the mobile service from our app, XAMLCS. We got a reference to that table, to-do item. And if we scroll down, we can see here's our handler for our insert operation. We've basically turned that insert operation into one line of code. So we can say to-do table, insert, and store that to-do item. You don't have to go and deal with adding service references or deal with low-level HTTP web requests or on your WinStore apps here. You don't have to utilize a HTTP client and set, say, what verb you want to use, whether it's post, put, get, or whatnot. Instead, one line of code, and basically you're interacting with that mobile service. And that's really the point of it. Reduce the code that you have to write such that you can go and focus on your client applications. Here's an example of a query. It's a simple where clause, and we're providing an expression here that says, query the to-do table and return back everything that is not already completed. And here's a simple update statement as well. If we wanted to see delete, a delete, again, is a simple operation that takes an instance of a to-do item, and that will go off and delete it from your cloud service running up in Windows Azure. So that's basically the client side and how we interact with the service. Let's actually have a look at what that has gone and done for us when we created that to-do item table. So we created a to-do item table, and if I click into it here, what we've got now is we can see that that's our data that's been, let me zoom in there, that's our data that's been persisted on our server. You can see we can check what's going on with VS, you can see the other item there as well, and you can see that there's a completed item and one that's not. So our mobile service exposed a dynamic API that was able to accept these to-do item entities and persist them to our DB. So that's what's gone on there with the basic quick start for getting started with mobile services. So next we'll talk about structured storage, and then we'll move into a bit more depth in terms of how you can add additional tables and add some server-side logic and send push notifications and such. So let's do that. So, structured storage. We saw that we stored some data. We stored some to-do items. So when I say structured storage, we're actually persisting that data in a SQL database in the back end. You'll note that I didn't write any T-SQL. I didn't write any create table statements. I didn't define any columns. That was all done automatically for me. The next statement here is basically saying if I have a single database that multiple mobile services are pointing to, it's partitioned by schema. So if we had two to-do item applications or mobile services using one DB, it would separate that by the application. So that's appx to-do items, so the schema would be appx, and that's the to-do item table. And for app y, it'd be app y with to-do item there as well. So it's basically partitioning the data by schema. The data, while we saw it in the portal, you can actually see it in the portal, you can add columns and such through there. But if you really want to manage your data, there's a few different ways you can do it. You can manage it directly through the SQL management portal that's available in the Windows Azure portal, or you can use perhaps my favorite SQL Management Studio. It's quite a powerful tool. Or you can use the REST API that the mobile service actually exposes. But essentially what I'd like you to take away is that data is accessible to you. It's not like locked down, so you as a developer don't have access to it apart from through the Windows Azure portal. It's actually available through, you know, the usual tools that you'd use on-premise, like SQL Management Studio and such. So you can definitely get at it. The next thing that I'm going to talk... Yeah, sure. Yes, yeah, so you... Yeah, so yes, you can migrate your existing DBs to Azure. For mobile services to pick it up, basically mobile services has some metadata that tracks the types of tables or the tables that are being used. So mobile services won't dynamically go and grab those tables. You'll need to create that table through the portal and then basically rename the schema of that table such that it marries up, if that makes sense. So it's not 100% there yet, but this is preview, and that's one of the items which we can take away that people may want to just import an entire database and not have to do anything like that. So typically you sort of drive from portal to create this stuff, but we can take that offline, and I'll also send an email to the product team on that. But structured storage is one piece. We're storing our data, right? But we need to be able to perhaps in some scenarios execute some server-side logic. So if I'm doing an insert, I may need to validate that data. It may not be good enough to validate the data on the client because people may perhaps go and sort of spam in data that's not really meant to go in there. So you may want some server-side logic. So the server logic all sits behind the REST API that's generated for you as part of mobile services. One of the other things that we've got is called dynamic schema. And I'll do a demo of this shortly. But basically what it means is the entities that are coming from your application that are pushed through this service API are scaffolded directly into the DB for you without you having to do any type mapping or write any SQL. So we call that dynamic schematization, and we'll add some properties to our to-do item, which will be inserted directly into the DB with supporting columns underneath that. The server logic is written in JavaScript. And essentially, that will intercept in the CRUD operation pipeline. So what that means is if you're doing that insert of a to-do item, you may want to say, well, hey, I want to validate that all to-do items are greater than 5 characters long. So This is what server logic is all about, is providing you the means to add your server-side business logic in a way that doesn't require you to do, you know, multiple deployments or author local, then deploy and that sort of thing. You can just edit it all directly into the portal there. And the last thing that the server logic provides there is some rich querying capability. So you saw within our application, we had basically an expression that was doing a query against our mobile service. And we didn't have to write any code to do that. We just provisioned our mobile service and that was it. So when you're writing your server logic, there's a number of different modules that are supported and global variables. So MS SQL is one of them. It allows you to write server-side logic that will execute some SQL script. In this case, it's just doing a select top one from a table. We've got a request object, which essentially allows you to respond to the client, perhaps saying a bad request, or to execute the request, which may be your insert statement. And we'll do an example of that shortly. We've got console, push notifications, globals there that allow you to interact with tables. We're going to see all of those in demos today, and also some common status codes. So when we talk about this REST API that's provided and this dynamic schematization, one of the key things that people need to understand is if I'm passing up an entity with properties of different data types, how are they going to be stored in my database? So at the moment, the values hitting that REST API are all pushed up in JSON format. So anything numeric is basically going to be stored as a float. Anything Boolean is going to be stored in your DB as a bit. Date time is using date time offset, and strings are going in as nvar char max. So this is a somewhat limited set of data types, and this is a preview at the moment. So you'll expect over time that you'll start to see more data types supported, such as, you know, your geospatial data types. So you've got DB geography and DB geometry supported if you're going to do those types of things. But today, this is what it is. Moving forward, you'll see this, you know, grow out exponentially. So we've talked about it a bit. Let's have a look at it. So we'll cut across to two here. So let's do a couple things. So we're actually sitting at the moment in the data tab. We've gone to our to-do item table, and we're going to select script. So this is where our server logic all gets executed. You can see that I can intercept different operations here, inserts, updates, deletes, and such. And if I start with this one here, perhaps what we'll want to do is perform that validation which we talked about. So we can say if the item, so the item variable is essentially what's being passed up. It had a property called text. If the length of that is less than 5, then I want to reject this insert operation. So I can say request.respond. And then I can say status codes dot bad request. And we can say text too short. Else, we'll use the request object to actually allow that insert operation to complete successfully. So that's the server-side script. Now let's look at the dynamic schematization a bit. Perhaps I want a date added column added every or updated every time I insert. So let's say item.dateAdded is equal to new date. So that's going to create a date added column for me. I'm going to save this server-side script. And it'll take a second there. And while that saves, let's go over here and also update our entity a little bit. Let's put in another member here, and we'll just call it prop bool, call it complete 2. If I come down where we perform an insert, we'll actually set that item as well. Say to do item dot complete 2. To do item dot complete. All right, so now we've got a new item or new variable added to our entity. And in our portal, our script should have saved. So our script is saved, and we're also adding a new date added there. So you can really see how quickly these columns are added. At the moment, we've only got these guys here. So let me execute this application again. F5 on that. Right, so there's our app. let's do something more than five, or five or more. I think I said less than five. So we'll hit save on this guy. So good, that's saved. Let's go and have a look at our portal columns. So let me refresh this guy. Probably do it this way. And we should see that now we have two more columns in that. There we go. So you can see there's now complete to and date added dynamically. I haven't had to touch any SQL at all. Data-wise, we can see that that data is now stored within our DB, and it's added nulls for the items that basically didn't have them set at the point in time that they were added. So let's jump back to this guy and provide something that's less than five. We'll hit save, and we should get an exception now. And there's our bad request saying text too short. So that's an example of how that server-side logic works and how the dynamic schematization works within your client applications. So let's move on to some sort of cool stuff here. So who knows what a push notification is? Anyone ever delivered push notifications? Right, so push notifications are essentially a way to send notifications to your users from your cloud services. And it may be your Windows 8 apps, it may be your Windows Phone apps, iOS apps, and Android apps. But in the case of Windows 8, push notifications allow us to send updates to our tiles. So this is my start screen. And the start screen is incredibly important to your Windows Store applications. It is the gateway to your app. So if you look at this screen here, we've got a number of different tiles. And these tiles are all controlled by push notifications. You can see different templates. We've got wide, we've got square. We've got ones which are doing what's called peaking. We've got badges like the count of 24 there. And essentially many different template types. So there's over 30 different template types that you can use to control how your information is surfaced on the screen here. Some are groups of pictures, some are just pure text, and others are combinations of both. And push notifications are the way that we can go and deliver these. So let's have a little look at the push notification lifecycle. It's basically a three-step process. Everything in green is provided for you. It's all free, all part of the Windows 8 platform. Everything in blue is basically what you as a developer need to program. So if I'm building a Windows Store app here, the first step I need to do to be able to send a push notification is request a channel URI. So a channel URI is a unique identifier that allows you to target a push notification to a particular application instance. So on my start screen that we just looked at before, I had a mail application. If I wanted a push notification to that, that would have a unique URI that I can send a push notification to. The next step that we do after we request the channel URI is essentially push that up to our mobile service or our cloud service. And there we will persist that channel. And then at some point in time in the future when we determine, hey, it's the right time to notify that user that something's changed, we'll go and retrieve that. So if we use, say, the mail application as that example, when a new mail comes in to our inbox in our service, basically we go, hey, Nick needs to know that he's got a new email, and I would grab his channel URI, and I'd compose a notification to send to him. So let's have a look at how that works. To send notifications, we've got a service called the Windows Push Notification Service. It's a free service Microsoft provides to enable these scenarios. And to send a notification through it, you need to do two steps. You need to authenticate against WNS. WNS is the Windows Push Notification Service. You need to authenticate against it, which returns a token. And then you need to compose that, say, tile, toast, or badge notification and push it through to the client. So when WNS receives that, it will then take that and then deliver that to your Windows 8 device. And then the notification client platform will take care of surfacing that using the appropriate template that you've selected while you were developing that particular notification. So that is the basic life cycle of a push notification. And I think perhaps the best way to see that is we'll do a demo soon. But let's look at how push notifications are supported in mobile services. The first thing it does is we basically provide a push.wns namespace that allows you to send tiles, toast, and badge notifications. For the authentication piece, the Windows Azure portal is actually going to capture the credentials that you need to go and authenticate against WNS. So there's two things. Use the push.wns namespace and also store your credentials in the portal. The thing about push.wns here, I don't know, the gentleman over there said he'd sent a push notification before. So if you're writing this from scratch, there's a lot of low-level coding you have to do. You have to go and deal with HTTP web requests, you need to deal with OAuth, you need to deal with tokens, you need to deal with XML serialization. Basically, this little helper that they provided in mobile services turns all of that into one line of code. So it's incredibly powerful, and it will really speed up your application development. So let's go and build a push notification scenario in this application. So, got my app back here. So let's start with the first piece. We need to go and get those credentials to authenticate against WNS. So I'm going to go to the Windows Developer Store. So this is the one with those links that I showed at the start. And we're going to basically submit an application name here. This will be interesting if we get it. Yes, okay. No one's released Beer O'Clock yet or reserved the name. So within the Windows Store, this is where you can go and request those WNS credentials that you can use in your application. So by requesting the application name there, I'm now able to use this advanced features option to go out and get those credentials. So let's click in here to the push notifications and live connect services info. And this is going to log me out. So let's go back. So let's go and get the first piece of the credential set that we need. There's two pieces to the credential set, one which resides in your client application and the other which resides in your cloud service. Essentially, all three mean that you're not going to get some third-party developer trying to send your application's users notifications. So it's a way to secure the notification lifecycle end-to-end. So the first thing we need is to grab this credential set. We return to our application, and it needs to actually be placed within our Apex manifest. So if I pull this across here, we've just provided those two values from the portal into our client application directly. While I'm here, I'm going to make a few changes to notification enable this app. So the first thing I need to do is if I want wide tiles on my start screen, I need to provide a picture for that. And we will just use a default wide tile. The default wide tile needs to be 310 by 150 pixels. And if I want to send toast notifications, I need to ensure that the application is set to toast capable. So that's our client app configured for the auth set and enabling notifications. Let's go and put our credentials into the portal here. So we've got a push option. And this basically captures your client secret and package SID. So again, these come from the Windows Store here. So we can go to the authenticating your service step, which is next, and we require a package or client secret. Sorry, let me get this right. Client secret. It's going to be fun. Too many windows. And package SID. And they just get pasted straight in there like that. Now, that will deal with the entire authentication flow for us. We don't need to deal with those OAuth tokens or anything like that. So we're done with the auth piece. Now what we really need to do is we need to build our client app to request that channel URI and then post that up to our service. So we need to request the channel URI, step one. Step two was post it to our service. And then step three was to actually send that notification. So let's do step one. Let's request that channel. So I'm going to use the onLaunched async, and we'll come down here. And to request a channel, you need to use the WinRT API. So I'm going to say var channel is equal to await. So that is a class within the WinRT API. I just control dotted then. So for those of you who have not done that before, it basically adds a using statement up to the top of your class. And then we're going to say create push notification channel for application async. This one always gets me because it's probably the most descriptive class name and method name in the entire WinRT API. Actually, I think the other one that's probably more description is the secondary tile async by a couple of letters. But that will request our channel from WinRT. Then the next thing we need to do is to actually send that up to our mobile service. So if you recall, we had this client here. So we're going to use that to go and store that channel up in our mobile service. So let's say mobile service dot get table. So we're going to need to get a reference to the table we want to store it in. And we're going to create a channel table. So we need a channel entity, which I'm going to just make very simple here with an ID and a URI. Hit dot. Now we're going to insert one of those channels to the channel table using the mobile service API here. So we'll new up that channel, and we'll just set the URI property equal to the channel.uri that was returned. So that will insert us a channel into our mobile service. But we're not quite done yet. Mobile services does not allow you to just arbitrarily create tables. The dynamic schematization is restricted to your columns. The tables need the application administrator or developer to actually provision them to start with. So let's go back to our mobile service here, Beer O'Clock. We'll click the Data tab, and I'm going to create a table. So this is what that quick start did for us in that create to-do item table. It basically executed this. So I'm going to create a table called Channel. And by default, it's got a bunch of permissions on there. And when we hit the auth piece, we'll come back and revisit this. But for now, we're just going to create an empty channel table. And by default, that's just going to add an ID column to that. So you'll see if I go to columns here, we've only got an ID. So that channel class or entity that we defined in our code base had an ID and URI. So again, the dynamic schematization here is going to add the URI for us. So that will get our channel registered, but I really want to add some server-side script here to enforce some business rules that I want applied to these tables. On the channel table, I want to ensure that I've only got one channel per application. I put my handler in the on-launched of my app, so every time my app runs, it's going to request a channel and try and insert that. So I want to restrict that such that it only adds that channel once. So to do that, we need to add a script. So I'll put this in, and we'll walk through the code. I'll just save this here. So the first thing that we're doing is we're using the tables object, and we're saying get table. So get the channels table. The saves are a little bit slower today. Oh, I'm going over Wi-Fi. Okay, I won't change now. But we say tables.getTable, and we get the channel table. I'll try and zoom a little bit here for you guys. So we get the channel table. The next thing we say is get everything within that that's got a matching URI column to the item that's being inserted. Then we're going to read that and post anything that comes out of that query into our insert channel if not found. So what we're saying there is if that query returned any results, then we will respond back saying, hey, that channel already exists. If no channels were returned matching that, we're just going to allow the insert to execute by calling request.execute. So that is our channel table, and basically we're ensuring we don't have duplicate channel URIs. So the next thing I want to do is step 3 of our push notification scenario. So now we've requested the channel on the client, we've registered that with our mobile service, we've ensured that we don't have duplicates. The third step that we're going to do is actually send a push notification. And in this application, I want to send a push notification every time someone inserts a to-do item. So to do that, again, we require some script. So I've created these snippets essentially to make it a bit faster through the demo here, but I'll walk through them. So our insert operation now is basically what we do is we execute the request to insert the to-do item. We respond to the client such that it can continue on because it's an asynchronous call. So the client will then continue processing whatever it needs to. And then in the background, we're going to go and send a notification. And we're passing a reference to the item that the to-do item that the person's inserting. So let's look at send notification. So to send a notification, again, we get a reference to the channels table because this uniquely identifies our app. We read out that table, and we're going to iterate through every channel in that table using a for each function, and that will return us each individual channel. Now, this is the magic piece that I was talking about that greatly simplifies the code required to send that notification. Push.wns has a number of overloads. This is for a toast notification of template type text 02. So if I were to look at toast notifications, you can see that there's a number of different variants of that template type. And I'm using this one here, so we should get something that looks like that. So we basically say, let's send a notification to the channel URI from our table. It's going to have an image that's stored somewhere on the web. We're going to have the item, the to-do item text displayed, and then we're going to say, hello, TechEdAU. So we're going to save this guy. And now we're going to spin that up. And we should see, if I haven't made any mistakes, we should see push notifications as we add items. Okay, so this is a network issue, which is why I should have killed that Wi-Fi. So that was basically saying that the WinRT API couldn't hit the service that returns back channels. So let me disconnect the Wi-Fi and do that. So let's run this. There we go. So that would have worked this time. Let's say, hello world, network fixed. Hit save. It's going and saving up there in our cloud service. We've had our channel already persisted, and that trigger on insert to the to-do item has gone and generated our push notification with an image of the person off the MSDN website, and it's got the custom text from our notification there. So that's pretty cool. So that's a toast. Let's quickly change this to send a tile. Just get rid of that guy. Let's change our service to send tile notifications, because tiles, as I said, basically it's the gateway to your application. So if you can keep that up to date and relevant, then people will more likely come and click on your application and continue to use it. So let's look at what a tile notification looks like. In this case, I'm sending a tile-wide peak image 03 to a channel URI. Again, it's using a different image source, this time a different size, and it's posting some text. So let me save that. Right, so that's saved. And I'm going to move my application over here so we can see it when it comes in. And you'll note that my app here is still running. I've gone and edited my server-side script without actually having to make any change to my code base on the client. So my app is still running, and my server side has changed. And there you go. You can see I've just sent a tile notification with an image, and it's got a peak of ASDF there. So that's push notifications using mobile services. And for anyone who's actually built them out from scratch without this sort of thing, without mobile services or the power of this API here, you'll really understand, you know, how much extra effort it would be without this. So quite easy here now. So let's jump back to the deck. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is authentication. And our auth story at the moment for mobile services, it provides a means to auth using Windows Live. So that's today. Moving forward in the future, we'll add other major identity providers. But for now, in this first release and preview, it's Windows Live. Now, if we want to start restricting those CRUD operations, the inserts, the updates, the reads and deletes that our mobile service is exposing, one way to do it is to use a table-level permission. So by default, your tables, like the channel table we created, they're restricted at anyone with the application key level. And that was the application key that we saw in our app.xaml.cs file. You could go less. You could say everyone in the world can execute these operations. You could go higher and say only people authenticated with Windows Live that are providing the appropriate token can execute this operation. Or you could say only scripts and admins, so the server-side scripts, or people with the administrator key, can actually go and execute these operations. So that's one level of granularity, right? It allows you to restrict a particular table quite literally with a change and a drop-down. If you want more granular than that, well then the mobile services server-side scripts has that user object parameter coming in. And that's got two things on there. It's got a user level, which will tell you if it's an admin user, an authenticated user, or an anonymous user. And it's also got a user ID on there. So if that person is authenticated with Windows Live, you'll get a unique ID for that user that you can store within a table. And then from there, you can build out policies that say perhaps only administrators can do, you know, something very unique. But for the most part, most people only really need that first option. So what we'll do is we'll go and do that. We'll restrict people from adding to-do items unless they're authenticated with Windows Live. So let's jump over here. So we're still quite zoomed in here, but that should be okay. So the first thing I want to do now is I want to say, on my to-do items, I don't want just anyone to be able to insert that. I only want people that have authenticated to be able to insert that. So I'm going to say for insert permissions, only authenticated users can insert a to-do item into my application. So that's done. You can see that these operations are independent, so each operation can be controlled differently. We'll just focus on insert. If I skip back to our Bira Clock app here, I'm going to run it, and we're going to see the application fail because we're not authenticated. Then we'll write the code to do that. So let's say test. So this should fail with an exception now. There it is. So it's saying unauthorized, 401 error. So okay, the drop-down worked, and now users need to be authenticated to utilize my application. So how do we actually configure that and implement that with mobile services? Well, the good thing is our server-side configuration is already done for us. Mobile services has taken care of that. We just need to write the small piece of code on the client that allows us to authenticate against this service. So to do that, we need a couple things. The first thing is we need to know our public URI for our service. So let me grab Bira Clock here and hopefully copy it. The next thing we need to do is we need to return back to our Windows Store where we got our push credentials. We need to carry on with this process just a little bit further. So let's go to representing your live app users. So what it's saying here is it a website or is it a Windows 8 app? It's a Windows 8 app. And we need to provide a terms of service. So this is basically telling the user what you're going to do with the data that's returned when you authenticate against Windows Live. So I'm just passing validation there. Now, when you authenticate against Windows Live, you need the redirect URI where that information is going to be going to, which in our case is our mobile service. We can also supply a little logo here for it, such that it's a little bit customized when the user's seeing it. Then we can simply hit save. And is the internet working? Yes, changes are saved. Right, so now I've saved that. So now we really only need to go and configure our client application to authenticate against Windows Live and then pass that token to our mobile services client such that it's used in the auth header for every request against that mobile service. So let's see how we can do that. I'm going to go into the main page here, which is where we're performing all our actions against our service. And I'm going to scroll down. And we'll see here, we'll go to the onNavigated to. So we're going to add some auth code. Now, this auth code uses what's called the Windows Live SDK for Windows Store apps. So this is available from Microsoft freely. And we need to add a reference to that. So let's add a reference so we can use the classes within it. And let's resolve this. Right. So that's part one. And we'll walk through this code in a second. Basically, I'm adding an authenticate method here. And I need to call that. So I'm going to call it, async. I'm making this method async so I can use await syntax here. We're going to call this authenticate method when the person hits the main page of the application. And this authenticate is going to have to occur before we can refresh the to-do items on the screen and start interacting with it. So the first thing here is saying, well, our live auth client is going to need to know what that redirect URI is, the same as what we put into the live portal. So let's copy this out again. Click back to our app. So there. The next thing, this is not really necessary for your client applications. This is really if you want to start testing with different users who may have different roles within your apps. So this just forces a log out. So what we do now is we take that live client handle and we basically log in. And this will show the web authentication broker to our users so they can log in. Now if we get a successful result, we then say, let's pass the authentication token that was returned from that login against live into our mobile service reference here. And that basically means that that token is then used for all subsequent requests. So really for login, there's three lines of code. Get a handle to the live auth client, perform the login, and pass the token on to mobile service client here. So let's spin this guy up. So before where it failed, now once we authenticate successfully, we should see that the user can now insert those items. And I think I got that wrong. And I think it's right. Let's see. There we go. Beer clock needs permission to sign in automatically. Access your name, gender, and pictures. We'll hit yes here. So let's try and add our to-do item now. And now you can see that we've successfully authenticated, and now we're able to insert. So really, it's now a few lines of code to have a service that's locked down and requires users to be authenticated. And I think if you've ever had to write this code, that's quite a powerful scenario for you, and it's very fast to implement. So let's return back to the deck here. So that was auth. Let's talk a little bit about the diagnostics, logging, and scale. So as far as diagnostics are concerned, we log API calls, we log CPU time, egress out of the data center. Logging, we've got some logging support for your server-side scripts. So we've got a console.error or a console object. It's got error, log, warn for logging different items there. And scale-wise, we can scale out our instance count of our mobile service. We can also scale up the VM size. We'll see a demo of this. And for our storage, we can scale out our multi-service tenant to a dedicated SQL DB. So if we have one tenant of that DB, we may have 10 mobile services pointing to one DB, and one of them gets really popular and needs to be broken out into its own database. We have the capability to go and point that mobile service now at a new database and then leave the multi-tenant database in place. We can also scale up our databases in Windows Azure. So let's have a quick look at some of the information that is provided today. So go to my desktop here. And we'll just click into Beer O'Clock again. So let's have a look at our dashboard. So this is some of the diagnostics that we collect by default for you. So you can see I'm tracking API calls, CPU time, data out. You see I've had 11 API calls. I've used a second or two of CPU. And you can see that I've sent back 65K of data over this period of time that we've been doing these demos. So that's the diagnostics that we provide. Again, as we move forward, you'll see more and more diagnostics available there. Let's look at our logging. So one of the things that I just want to point out here, on our to-do item table script that we provided, I actually had some code there to log successful push notifications as well as erroneous push notifications. So when you're writing your server-side script, the console object here, it's your friend. It will really help you troubleshoot these applications or your server-side scripts. Because at the moment, there's not a built-in debugging capability for you for these server-side scripts. They're just there and they run. So you've got the capability to go and see those logging items logged here. What's going on with you? Interesting. So let's have a look at one of them. So these are the successful responses from WNS. These statuses are actually quite important, so I'll spend a minute on them. If you're building a scalable push service, let's say you've got 1 million client applications, the response coming back from WNS is important to take note of in your apps. This notification status here is a status returned by WNS saying that notification was received by the WNS service, but it's not really saying I've delivered it. So if you look at that and say received, oh great, my client's got the push notification, not exactly true. It just means WNS has received it and it will try to deliver it. There's some other headers that can be returned here if you request specifically for them in the options parameter that's on the push.wns namespace. The key one that I should have put in there, but it's called device status. Device status will actually return back if your Win8 device is temporarily disconnected from the WNS service, or if it's, you know, just disappeared altogether. So these little statuses, while they sound insignificant, if you're trying to build something that's sending millions of notifications, they're quite relevant. If a device is temporarily disconnected, you may then choose to store that status information in your channels table and perhaps exponentially back off on sending notifications to that client, which means your service has less load to process. And then once that you see that that client is now back online, you can then resume sending notifications at, you know, your standard rate. So definitely take note of status information coming back from WNS when you start getting, you know, serious volume in terms of notifications and such. So let's look at the scale option here. So at the moment, I'm running in a shared mode. So shared mode is great. It's using a shared core in Windows Azure. But if your app is starting to, in that diagnostics tab, consume a lot of CPU time, you might want to branch out into a reserved mode. Reserved mode just gives you a dedicated core. So to do that, I can hit reserve. This is a spending warning saying this is going to cost me something to do. Since my manager pays my bills, I don't mind too much. But what I can do is I can go to reserve mode and I can scale out my mobile service, beer o'clock here, to three instances at an instance size of one core and 1.7 gig of memory. Now this is preview, as Glav is actually helping with the next demo. This is preview, so you'll see that this instance size will turn into a drop down. You'll have small, medium, large, that instance count will also get larger. If you want 100 instances, you could get that in preview. We're basically just restricting it for now. But now I save this, you'll see in a matter of 2-3 seconds, my entire deployment has been moved from one shared core into three dedicated cores. And that's quite impressive as far as things are concerned. So what do you think about that? Pretty cool? All behind the scenes for us. We haven't had to log into servers, provision hardware, and like migrate this application. It's just been done for us. DB-wise, you can increase the size of that. You can flip over to business editions, scale out like that. So let's jump across here, and let's say the do-to demo. So let's reply to Glav here. Glav is an MVP. You can reach him at Glav. He's an ASP.NET MVP. In fact, he's got a talk tomorrow, which is worth going to if you want to see ASP.NET Web API. Ready to go. So what I'm going to demo here is what's called do-to. And do-to is an application that is essentially a bit of a beefier to-do application. So let me click into it here. And we were really creative on the naming of this and coming up with a new application scenario. But do-to here is loading up at the moment. And it allows me to have lists. So you can see a list there called blah. And hopefully, in a second, if I wait for Glav to do something, he will send me an invite. So let me return and ask him for an invite to one of his lists. Can you send me an invite? So while we wait for that, let's have a look at do-to. Do-to is a bit of a beefier mobile service. It's got a number of different tables, and it's got some more complex server-side scripts. So Glav just sent me a invite, so if we return back to the application here, we should hopefully have an invite, which is not looking very impressive for my demo here. Let me try and start this guy again. Interesting. So, all connecting up. I'm not seeing it there. Well, let me see if I can invite him, perhaps. So, let's start a new list. So this is going to create a new entry in our mobile service. Going to add some items. Test one. Right, so that's working. I'll try and invite Glav. I actually cannot spell his last name properly. Do not tell him, he's not in this room. So I've now sent an invite to Paul. And Paul has also just finally invited me to his list. So I've got a push notification there, so that's cool. So I've accepted his invite. So I should now see Glav's list. Okay, so he's added some items here for me to do. Get me to grow a real beard. Apparently I'm not doing well enough. Okay, I automatically pimped his web API talk without him knowing. Interesting. So let's say, okay, done that. Now we're turning this to-do item list into a bit of a chat program. Right? Yep. I remembered that. All right. Let's see, what else have you got for me? Let's see. So you can see this is like now an interactive list or to-do application. And Glav's there. He's been invited to my list or vice versa. We've got push notifications coming in. He wants me to refresh my screen. So this is my favorite part of this demo, because it is the unknown part where I allow my friend, in this case it's Glav, to change the background of my application. So in do two here, we're essentially allowing people to, or allowing the administrator to execute an admin script to change that background surface that I've got behind there. So hopefully he's been nice. All right. Okay. That's funny. Let's remove a few of these. Let's remove items. Okay. So I think you guys get the idea. So mobile services here is providing us, you know, a reasonably interactive experience for end users of our client apps. And the great thing about it is it's very quick and easy to build out these experiences with mobile services, because those key and core scenarios that you need to deliver in your applications are enabled for you by default. We can deal with our structured storage and exposing those tables out on the web in an authenticated and secure way. We can send push notifications to our client applications. We can do a whole number of things with mobile services that essentially allows us... Okay, try refresh again if I'm game. I don't know, what do you guys think? You want to do it? Okay, let's see what he's got. Okay. Nice. All right. The Credible Hulk. I think you will enjoy Paul's session tomorrow if you decide to attend. He's a very funny guy. All right, so that's do two. And again, built out very fast. If you search for do two on MSDN, you'll actually find the full source for that application. And it's got the full source on the client. It's got a little bit of documentation for how you can go and set up your mobile service. And I've basically done it in like 10 minutes while I was watching a session today. So you'll see that you can build these things really fast. So I think we're getting close to our time. So let me go through the last or closing slides. So So this is always the big question, and the question is basically, how much is this costing me? So to answer that, so at Preview, we're essentially giving you 10 free mobile services running on shared instances. Now, the bit that can be a little bit confusing, so I've tried to do an infogram here, if that's what you'd like to call it. Essentially, the DB is not included within those 10 free mobile services, but if you've got a Windows Azure free trial, if you've emailed me from earlier today, that includes your DB as well. If you've got an MSDN subscription, that's already got DBs within it as well. So basically, you can build out this whole thing for free, and you can see if your service is really going to sink or swim. So it's really quite a good time to sort of get involved and start playing with this stuff. So if you want to proceed past the shared instances, you can go to reserve mode like I did today, but that is charged. It's currently at a reduced rate, the same as Windows Azure websites. I think it's reduced by 33% on normal. So I think that comes in for a small, like around eight cents US per hour. But in most cases, shared should be enough to get you going. At the moment, as far as SLAs are concerned, because this is people who are considering writing applications want to know, you know, what's the SLA in Preview. In Preview, there's no SLA. It is a Preview service. But in practice, it should be quite good. When we go GA, it'll be 99.9%. So let's close out. So let's talk about what we just saw. We saw Windows Azure Mobile Services. We saw it from a Windows 8 store app perspective. We are, as I said, building client SDKs for Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. And in actual fact, if you wanted to get a head start on those platforms, you can actually go and interact directly with that REST API yourself if you don't want to wait for official SDKs. Because, again, the Service API Mobile Services stands up for you is consumable basically by anything that can execute a web request. Yep.
When you say SDKs for those other phones, does that mean within their native applications for those phones?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So if you're building a Windows Phone app, there will be a client SDK for that, for instance. Yep. So we saw data. Our DB, as far as all the columns are concerned, were dynamically created for us. We didn't write a single line of SQL. Yet we created, you know, a very rich experience. We saw push notifications. We lit up our start screen. We were able to see tile updates and toast updates, two very important concepts when building out Windows Store apps. We added auth to our service, so we locked down our service. And I think you'll agree that was pretty easy compared to doing it and writing out that code for yourself. Has anyone done that before? Okay. All right. Trust me, easy versus... Go watch Glav's session tomorrow, and he'll show you how to do it, you know, the hard yak away. We added some server logic to complement our service and our client app and add sort of business logic on the server side. We saw the diagnostics logging. We also scaled out our application to three dedicated cores. So here are some resources. So that's the Mobile Services Developer Portal. So that's the place that you go if you want to see tutorials that go out through all the steps that we just did today and teach you how to build out these scenarios. There's an API reference, which is sort of where you go after you get through all the tutorials, and that is basically like a code-based documented API. So one of my colleagues focuses on Windows Azure scenarios with iOS and Android, and he's actually started playing, just building his own, it's unofficial, but building his own client libraries for iOS and Android. When we officially release them, obviously this is irrelevant, but it means anyone who really wants to get a head start can jump in and perhaps use some of his stuff if they want to sort of use those other platforms. And with that, feedback is very important. Basically means I can come back to Australia and visit you guys and my family, so please submit it if you are happy with this session. I take letters by post if you're unhappy. And you may win, it looks like, an awesome mouse. What's this? They put these slides on. Keep learning, connecting, download the TechEd resources. So the resources will be online, and that's it. But one last thing. Everyone, up the back there, the guy that looks maybe like my brother, that is Glav, the guy with a sense of humor. And what time's your session tomorrow, Glav?
11:30, Arena 1B.
Okay, 11:30 tomorrow, Arena 1B. Not 11:30 p.m., this is the last session of the day. So thank you very much for coming.